I've been wondering lately, what does our faith cost us? What does my faith cost me? What does your faith cost you? What does it cost to be a follower of Christ? I mean, if we want to get real simple, what does it cost us to come to church on Sunday morning? An extra hour or two of sleep? A couple of hours of our Sunday morning? Or if you skip Sunday school, you could do it in a little more than an hour. Is that it? Is that the cost of following Christ? It's not like Jesus' day, when there could be a real physical cost to following Jesus. I mean, if you were a Jew in those days and you began to follow Jesus, you followed this guy who talked love and forgiveness and who hung out with the marginalized people, the sick, both physical and mentally, those on the street. And he said to them, "Follow me." Remember, he even said to them, "Don't worry about your family. Drop everything. Come now. Follow me." There was a real threat, especially at this point, because there were those who were not happy with Jesus. There was a cost, and for many, an extreme cost. But today we say, no big deal. To follow Jesus, all we need to do is get up on Sunday morning, go to church, maybe say a prayer here and there. If we're really serious, read our Bible every now and then. Is that what being a follower of Christ today means? Not much division. We're all pretty peaceful. How would the world look at us today if we truly followed Jesus? How would the world look at us today if we found ourselves talking to, meeting with, inviting into our home the marginalized, the sick, both physical and mentally, those on the street? Would we find ourselves divided from the world as we know it, if only for a while, or maybe for a lifetime? The gospel passage that we read today are perhaps the 8 hardest verses to read, especially in Luke. Add to that this love song that Kevin read this morning, this love song gone wrong in Isaiah. And to be honest, it's just not a real uplifting day in the church house, is it? We first have this love song written from the point of view of the vineyard owner who loves his vineyard, and he works to move rocks and to tend grapes and to build walls, and he does everything possible to have an amazing vineyard. And what happens? Literally, sour grapes. We read a little further and we soon discover that Isaiah is saying that God is the vineyard owner and the disappointing fruit are us. Are us. I can't help but think Isaiah could write the same love song about the world today. All that God did to make this place amazing for us, and what do we do? How do we treat one another? What do we make important, and what do we ignore? The Isaiah passage really offers very little hope. There isn't the happy ending where the crop changes and it becomes sweet and perfect. And there's free-flowing wine available for all. Actually, it's quite the opposite. The vineyard owner says, "No more water. No more am I tending the vines. No more am I protecting them. I'm letting them go. I'm done." That's pretty hard to hear, isn't it? How often do we feel like that maybe God has said, "I'm done"? Or at least that God should say, "I'm done"? Then we read the gospel. We really have to put into context here that Jesus is headed to Jerusalem. Remember, a few weeks ago we read the passage that said his eyes were fixed on Jerusalem. Much lies ahead for Jesus, and he is aware of that, and we're aware of that. But the followers of Jesus that day don't begin to understand. They don't begin to understand what he's about or what he's about to go through. We've come to see Jesus as this loving, merciful, peaceful Messiah, and to hear the words that "I don't come to bring peace, but division." Well, those are hard words to hear. We want the happy ending, the peace on earth. And to hear that families will be divided sounds so harsh. I was thinking about that this week, and I started thinking back to all the different times that I've sat down with families after they've lost a loved one. And you start to hear how families see each other differently than maybe the outside world does. Oh, sure, everyone thought Mom was the greatest, but she ruled with an iron fist. Oh, sure, everyone loved my brother, but he tormented me. You know, my friend Jim Knuckles has a saying. I've said it to you before, but family's a tough gig, man. So what does Jesus mean that households will be divided? What does he mean, father against son and son against father? Mother against daughter and daughter against mother? And mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law? You can read different theologians and you can find a lot of ideas, and you probably have many yourself. But I personally believe that Jesus was saying to us all, nothing can be more important to you than your faith in me and in God. If following me means that your family turns from you, then so be it. If following me means you're going to fall out of grace with your friends or your community or your job or anything, then so be it. But we have to make that choice. We have to decide, is there a line in the sand for us? Is there something that we say, I'm not willing to give it up for Jesus? If so, then there's a problem. There's an old saying, if I could save myself, then the whole dying on the cross was a massive overreaction on God's part. Following Jesus is about following him. We can't do it on our own. It is about following him, not just from home to home where people love, not just from town to town sharing about him, not just following him from hospital to homeless shelter offering love and help, but following him all the way to the cross. that's not exactly a pretty picture for us. But it's where we're called. When we look at Isaiah, we see a God who Isaiah said would just say, I'm done with all of this. I've done all for you, and look around. I've given you more than you could even begin to deserve. I've done this all for you, and what's my yield? Nothing. People who don't love, people who don't care, people who don't give themselves back to me. I can't help but look around our world right now, and people seem to be in a state of concern and fear. I hear probably a dozen times a day, I just don't know what's going on. How are we going to make it through this? Well, you know, every generation has had that feeling. And yes, maybe things seem bleak, and we seem to be lost. But do you know what? God didn't say, I'm done. God didn't say, no more for you. Instead, God said, I'm sending you someone to show you the way. And Jesus came and he said, follow me. Follow me. Roy and I too have been obsessed with the Olympics. Watching the young men and women who give all that they've got to work and train and compete in so many different events that are over just like that. But my favorite part of the Olympics this year was something they did differently, and that it was at the opening ceremony. It wasn't the show or all the hoopla. It was watching those athletes walk in. And as they walked in with their country, as they got to the end of the row, they dispersed. And they didn't stay gathered in their countries like they've done all the years before. And they began to mingle with one another and take selfies with one another. Selfies, the international language. And they began to be together. They didn't speak the same languages. They probably didn't know each other, but they were together. They were divided, not from each other, but from the world where war and hatred and anger kept them apart. But there they were, together. That's what we're called to be. Unified in our mission to follow Christ. Not letting the fears and the worries of the world drag us away from our mission. Yes, there will be turmoil, fire along the way. But you know, fire purifies precious metal. Fire clears the way for sometime new growth. Fire comes, and we're to jump in because Jesus leads the way. Follow. Follow, follow all the way to the cross, but all the way to new life. Follow. Amen and amen.